Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
T-Mobile 5G home internet can leave you with slower speeds during its busiest hours. Why deal with that? Switch to Cox internet with 2x faster download speeds than T-Mobile 5G home internet during peak hours. Visit cox.com/5G home to learn more.
Heart, care. We believe these two words are better together. At Biltmore Cardiology, they are inseparable. That's why our team of board-certified cardiologists is focused not only on outcomes, but on providing compassionate cardiovascular care. Heart care is better together. Schedule an appointment today at BiltmoreCardiology.com.
On a warm summer's evening, on a train bound for nowhere, met up with a gambler. We were both too tired to sleep, so we took turns of staring out the window at the darkness till boredom overtook us and he began to speak. He said, "Son, I've made a life out of reading people's faces and knowing what the cards were by the way they held their eyes. So if you don't mind my saying, I can see you're out of aces. For a taste of your whiskey, I'll give you some advice." So I handed him my bottle, and he drank down my last swallow. Then he bummed a cigarette and asked me for a light. And the night got deathly quiet, and his face lost all expression. Said, "If you're gonna play the game, boy, you gotta learn to play it right. You got to know when to hold up, know when to fold up, know when to walk away, and know when to run. You never count your money when you're sitting at the table. There'll be time enough for counting when the dealing's done."
Why should you visit TheChairShot.com? TheChairShot.com is your home for hard-hitting reviews, news, opinion, and analysis with attitude. Why? Because you're smarter than the average fan. TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
It's Pastoral Down.
You straight punk bitch!
I mean, you're just gonna replace me.
Shut up!
Brandon Morales,
the biggest slut in the Western Hemisphere!
Why do I have to have a buzzer?
And Greg DeMarco.
You are now and will forever be an asshole.
Because it's my show.
And I love you, Greg.
You guys know how to party.
You're welcome.
What better way to follow the gambler than with Big E screaming into a microphone? It is time for another edition of Chair Shot Radio. My name is Greg DeMarco. You can find me all over your social media, although I think I wasn't active before. You should see me now. You can find me, however, all over your social media at Chair Shot Greg. Chair Shot Radio is part of the Chair Shot Radio Network, which you can find at
TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
You can also find the show over at eWrestlingNews.com. Go check it out. Wrestling news, analysis, lots of opinion stuff. Thanks to the staff at the Chair Shot. All you need, you can find in those two places. E-Wrestling News and...
TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
Like probably 50% of the podcasts in the world this week, we open with a little Kenny Rogers passing away, The Gambler, classic tune. I knew it's one of those things that Patrick O'Dowd wouldn't have asked for, but I'm sure he thought about it. So we went ahead, opened the show that way with The Gambler. Not going to be a topic of conversation on this show today, however. Lots to talk about. We got a little fun wrestling review we're going to do with you. But first, got to bring in our cast of characters, of course. He's been doing this down since day one-ish. May of 2011, we'll be celebrating 9 years here shortly. And maybe by then, we'll be allowed to leave our houses. It is The Wrestling Realist on the Twitter at WRESTLNGREALIST. Patrick O'Dowd.
FABULOUS. FABULOUS. Yes. Diamonds on my neck. Yes, I'm fabulous.
Shut up!
What's up, man?
That's what you say when you like don't have anything poignant to say. Like sometimes you come in and you're like, Kenny Rogers was a great man. Other times you're like...
No, I mean, we talked about Kenny Rogers on the Bandwagon Nerds podcast that just dropped today, so...
I'm sure you did. I mean, I'll listen to it when I have a free half day, but when's...
It's 2 hours. 2 hours. Back off.
2 hours and 10 minutes. I know. I uploaded the file.
2 hours and what?
10 minutes.
10 minutes. Those 10 minutes were important. That's when we talked about The Gambler.
See? Those 10 minutes at the beginning or the end? I need to know when to fast forward.
It's the end. I loved the show... By the way, I'll pimp it later, but I loved the show this week.
We will. We will indeed. But first...
Technical difficulties aside.
It happens. We got to bring in ring announcer to the stars, the queen of soft style herself. Down since day, I can't remember what it was, but now it's probably like 1237-ish. At the hashtag Miranda on Instagram and Facebook, but definitely not Twitter, Miranda Morales.
Luckily for you, I never have anything poignant to say. So,
never.
Yeah.
You have a whole podcast of non-poignant topics and discussions that takes place.
You know, if people love non-poignant things, like hashtag Miranda Show is for you.
I mean, Patrick and I have been non-poignant for years, so... We got the market cornered.
No, I do feel like if you know, I mean, out of everyone, you guys do have some pretty poignant things to say. Maybe not every moment, but like way more than most people.
I would agree with that, especially, you know, me. Also, Patrick, especially me. Here, Patrick, I'll just say it for you.
Awesome!
I came to
okay.
Anyway, so last week, first of all, recording date, March 24th, 2020. I think it's important to keep that going right now. With the state of the world that we live in, last week was the coronavirus episode of Chair Shot Radio. This week, we'll get a quick update, and then we'll go into some first ever Clash of the Champions. But let's get a little coronavirus update going on. Patrick O'Dowd is currently sheltered in place. So tell us how you're... It's not even the right.
It's so weird because it's like they're like, don't leave your house, but you can leave your house to do like all these things, and so like we're not as bad as like Illinois. Like my family lives in Illinois, and like my dad works for Kraft Foods, and so he's allowed to leave his house, and he's got like a little piece of paper he's got to carry with him while he drives to work to like show people that like I'm allowed to go where I'm supposed to go. We're not like that.
He could probably make money like selling those things.
Old man O'Dowd might be able to. He's too much of a forthright boomer to do anything like that. He's going to go do his work at the old factory.
I mean, despite being born not during that decade, you're kind of a forthright boomer yourself. So I see where you get it.
Oh, that's full of shit.
I feel like that's just like a real world hall pass. Like, here's your hall pass so that you can go around.
I mean, but he can't really go around. Like, he can go to work and home. Like, that's it. Like, it's like... like, I don't know exactly what the rules are. Like, nobody seems to know, like, with the whole, like
they don't know. They're just trying to put it out
there.
Because
if you want
to
go to the grocery store, you still go to the grocery store. But, like, what time do you go?
It's like, you can't, you know, stay inside and don't go out unless you have to do one of these 74 things, which are all the things you would do normally. So it
the word non-essential is very broad and varies from state to state.
Yeah, it really does.
It really does.
America, yes.
But that's okay, you know.
America.
But it still is. It is keeping people inside, and it is keeping people, you know.
Ish.
But more.
I think ish is
more
ish
than
is
they
the
were.
I do think it's more.
And that's what matters.
But for example, I went to pick up food today, and you wouldn't have known, like, that people weren't supposedly the house. Like, traffic was just, it was kind of normal. Like, it was a little bit lighter, but I was like, there's too many cars out for, like, not everybody needs this much food. Like, what's going on here? I'm trying to avoid you crazy people who hoarded the toilet paper, and yet you're still hoarding the toilet paper, you assholes. Stop it.
So Sunday, I think it was Sunday. Sunday was the day I did, like, the 10-mile. Yeah, Sunday. Before I did the 10-mile thing that Miranda knows about, I happened to go through the Walmart neighborhood market to get water and stuff like that, and then I went back in. I saw this big long line. I was like, "What's that line for?" Line was for the toilet paper. Line dissipates immediately, and I just got like a giant thing of toilet paper, and I was like, "I'm good for the next 6 months with this giant thing of toilet paper that I bought." So, but it was just the, like literally, like that stocked me up, and now I have no reason to buy toilet paper no matter what happens. So
you're part of the problem. You're hoarding.
No, I'm not hoarding. It was one package, just one big package. Like, what was I supposed to do? Tell them, no, I want half
like
the
you
package?
You bought the bulk package, right?
Like, that's all they had.
Like, and you bought one, right? You didn't buy, like, eight.
You can't buy more than one. They won't allow you.
Right.
So it doesn't matter.
Well, that's the thing is, like, when this all broke down, like, it was the crazy, you know, family of two getting seven of those 28 packs of toilet paper because – and here's the thing is, let's be real, everybody. If shit really goes down – but I'm
cheating. Literally.
Yeah.
Like, if this all breaks down, are you really going to be worried about wiping your ass? No. Is that really what's going to be important to you? I actually buy into the people buying the guns more than the people buying the toilet
what's
paper.
Funny,
because if you're
going
to believe in apocalypse, like toilet paper, are you going to do? What, you going to throw a roll at him? It's going to bounce off your face?
There's strategy behind it. You never know. The three items that have really gone up in sales that are surprising to people, one is guns. Number two is bidets.
That doesn't hurt at all.
You know, bidets.
Oh, yeah, bidets. Yeah, that's the same thing.
Because you don't have to
right
buy, have to buy toilet paper.
And number three is,
at that point.
Number three is live cam girls. So it's very interesting how things have gone. and that's a real stat. I saw it online, so it's got to be real.
Oh, yes.
I'm telling you, Corbin's never heard it.
No, not at all. Not at all.
I mean, I know you're not on social media that much, but if you've seen how many people, whether half jokingly, full jokingly, or not jokingly, started a message or started a Facebook post or a post saying, "Man, I guess I'm really gonna have to start that fans only site."
right. And it just seems like there's a lot of desperately horny people out there, including good old JR. By the way, little disturbing to see JR like hitting on.
Oh, he
women.
Always does that. That's nothing new.
He's a lech.
Go listen to listen to his old show before he changed the format. Listen to his interview with Becky Lynch. That's all I'm going to tell you. But I
want to
have fun with people.
I want to.
We want, you know, we kind of want to bring back the classic. So let's have some fun. 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. What's your problem with the Hacksaw Jim Duggan theme song? I don't understand.
It's just really odd and not what I thought you were going to play.
We don't
given
always,
what we were about to cover.
We don't always. Sometimes we just play a song that has nothing to do with the topic. Like it's just
clearly.
For fun, man. It's just for fun.
But Hacksaw Jim Duggan.
What, you didn't care when I played Rick the Model Martell?
No, that's because that's the greatest mid Carter of all time, sir.
Shut up! That's his number one.
See,
number one mid Carter.
I got a new soundbite for takes like that, Patrick O'Dowd, where you get mad about Hacksaw Jim Duggan not
being
related.
I'm not mad. I just thought it was weird.
When you,
like, you can't put words into my mouth.
Well, I can, but if you've been here for 9 years, I can put words in your mouth. When you get mad about Hacksaw Jim Duggan, but don't get mad about Rick the Model Martel, Mr. Rollins has something for you.
Johnny, idiot face.
That's what I have to say about that. I couldn't get a clean copy of that.
Can,
I'm going to work on it.
Yeah, it was like, you can give me that shitty soundbite all you want. That's fine.
I know. Expected better from you, Greg. Expected more.
Wow.
Damn.
It's all right. I'll work on it. I'll get there. But that's what I want. So I'm reorganizing the sound bites, and so that's something that I actually wanted to bring up because – you know, it's really easy to go out there and get a soundbite nowadays, you know, and put things together. It's a lot easier than it used to be, thanks to the method within which we record the show, by the way. Yep, show is recording. That's good. It's 14 minutes I waited to check on that, so it's a good thing it was actually recording. If you guys have any requests for soundbites, now's probably the time, because now we're all at home and we have time to do things like make soundbites, so... If there's any requests, especially for Patrick, who's been there, you know, Miranda was on the Blog Talk for a little bit, but Patrick's on the Blog Talk forever. If there's any old ones you need me to go back in and fish out, I can. God. And it's
I'm going to have to, like, go listen to old episodes. Is that what you're going to make me do?
You don't have to. It's up to you. You don't have to.
Well, as long as you get, like, the important theme songs back. Like, I still want those old, speaking of WCW, those old WCW theme songs that we used to play for breaks, those are just classics.
It was just a couple. It was just the Steiners, Sting, Bad Street. I think that was it.
Bad Street's amazing.
That was the original. Yes. Bad Street was the
Bad Street. And that song is long as hell.
It is.
It was a really long song.
It sure is. But that was our break. Back when we used to have a break in the middle of the show, Bad Street was the...
It's like a 6-minute intermission.
That's when I would have to go get the guest and oh yeah, all of it was what we had to do, but it worked.
Chris Masters marking out for Sting's theme music. That's
oh yeah,
still one of my favorite moments on the show.
He asked me to put him back on hold, so yeah, that was the best.
And your Edge mix, you still got your Edge mashup?
I haven't been able to find it, so I'm gonna have to go back in because I didn't make that. I stole that. Let's be honest. And I got to go back in and find the Edge mix because that was good. The Edge mix was perfect. It like had the opening, then it went into the Brood theme song, then it went into like the Edge, you know, You Think You Know Me, and then it went into the actual Edge theme song, the one that we all know and love. So.
Yeah, you're breaking up. Now,
nothing.
Wait, what was that, Miranda?
One of those weird bugs that have been like infesting Arizona.
No, like I was like, no idea. We live in a frosted wasteland here in Massachusetts. We don't have bugs yet.
Yeah, we have bugs here, and it was a bug that it hit.
Can you still not hear me?
No, you're fine.
Okay, good. By the way, don't put that. I have zero bugs, so don't put that on the state of Arizona.
Like it's the state of Arizona. You may not have it in your house, wherever you live, but
so it's like Arizona, like Australia, light, where maybe. Like you know how there's always those sometimes. Photos of like crazy bugs.
We do have some.
No, not crazy bugs, but the wildlife can be outrageous. There was a bobcat just hanging out in front of my house like 2 weeks ago. Huge-ass bobcat, like zoo-sized.
Every time I visit Greg, like at once every 6 years or so, it's kind of like the passing of Haley's Comet. When I do visit Greg, I check for scorpions everywhere I go.
And I've barely ever come across a scorpion. Never.
And snakes.
Really?
And basically, I'm just always afraid I'm going to die in Arizona.
My parents, they live in Tempe. They always have scorpions.
It all depends on what your house is built on. And if you're built on citrus, then yeah, you're screwed. Our neighborhood is built on cotton. And so that's why we don't have that problem. And Miranda also says that like she not only doesn't know where I live, but hasn't repeatedly made fun of where I live. So she acts like,
hey, quid pro quo. Like you do the truth. Same for me. I do the same for you.
That's the truth right there.
The big thing, I actually have actual wildlife around me. Seen coyotes, javelinas, bobcats, bunnies.
Bunnies.
I think our favorite thing in Massachusetts is that we do have just random ass bears wander through neighborhoods.
Ooh, interesting.
No, that's like a real thing that happens. Like my, it hasn't happened in my yard. I've only had like raccoons and really big skunks.
You know what happens if the bear shows up in your yard though? He's gonna look at you and he's gonna
say, leave it. You leave it the fuck alone. Exactly. And let it do whatever. He's gonna look at you.
He's going to look at you.
I will
he's
not
gonna,
fuck with a bear.
He's going to inform you of one thing and one thing only.
This is my yard now.
And you're going to have no choice whatsoever.
It's just one of, you know, it's like that country bumpkin local news thing, though. Like, inevitably, about once every, about this time of year when hibernation ends, we get some report of somebody in our town, a bear wandering through the neighborhood every year. Bears.
So anyway, back on topic. Let's talk about the coronavirus. So we talked about Patrick, shelter in place. State of Arizona, we're up to 5 deaths. I got the latest stats, 326 confirmed cases. Of course, the whole confirmed cases number is tough because you just never know. And there's not enough tests out there to really know right now. So everybody's taking care of themselves. We're all working from home. We're doing everything we can. Everything's canceled. We're trying to – I mean, I went – drove 2 miles – 2 miles – 2 hours north on Saturday to go hiking, and my kid fell in a lake. So, you know, it's just things that happen that you do and have a lot of fun. So you just got to make the best of the situation and do everything you can and, you know, take care of yourself. That's what we're all here to do, and that's what we're all going to do.
Wild card, bitches! Yeah!
Speaking of nothing that has anything to do with what we're about to talk about, Miranda, sell some t-shirts. Let the people know.
Yes, of course. So, ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to support thechairshot.com, if you'd like to just buy yourself a new t-shirt, especially after, you know, we are all out of quarantine, you may want to go back into the world and show off your sweet, sweet style. You can go to prowrestlingtees.com/thechairshot. There are over 25 different shirts that you can view that you could purchase if you really wanted all 25. But there's a huge variety of designs, colors, styles, including the OG chair shot shirt, the OG user head, multiples actually, the hashtag save tag team wrestling, and one that I completely forgot about, but exists, is the chair shot Corona shirt. Now, it's not the coronavirus, but it is modeled after Corona beer. So if you'd like to be ironic, or you really love Corona beer, there's a shirt for you there. And of course, I have to plug my own shirt, the Queen of Soft Style shirt. All available, most of them $19.99, which is a fairly good deal. You do have to pay a little bit more if you want to go soft style, which is I recommend. You want to be comfortable, especially if you are at home in your day PJs or night PJs, or now your PJs are just mixing in together to all day PJs. What really works well with those is a soft style t-shirt. So go to prowrestlingtees.com/thechairshot to get your chair shot t-shirt today.
Just PJs at this point. There's no day, no night. It's just PJs.
I mean, I'm trying.
That was really bleak, man.
Jesus, I don't Christ, like
I'm
sitting
not
at home all
during
day.
This show, man. What the
I don't
hell?
Like sitting at home all day. I
Yet.
Can't help it. I can't help
yes.
it. So.
Yes.
While you're wearing your no chair fun. Shot t-shirt, you can also head on over to powerslam.tv and watch some wrestling, because what else are you going to do right now, right? You're going to watch wrestling, and you can do so for just $6 a month. But you don't have to plunk down $6 a month right now. Oh, no. You can get yourself a free month. Check it out. See if you want it. I'll tell you how on the back end.
Are you looking for the newest and hottest in the world of pro wrestling? Then check out the amazing action on powerslam.tv, the biggest indie pro wrestling channel in the world. Get over 6,000 hours of the best events from over 150 of your favorite promotions from 20 different countries around the globe. Brands like Progress Wrestling, Evolve Wrestling, Combat Zone, Defy, PCW Ultra, PWX, Over the Top, Shine, and hundreds of others, with fresh content added every day for only $5.99 per month. Get your free trial today at powerslam.tv.
That's powerslam.tv, promo code ChairShot. Pick up your free month, try it out, see if you like it, and if you do, then you can sign up and pay just $6 a month. But check it out, powerslam.tv, promo code ChairShot. That's powerslam.tv, promo code ChairShot.
Watch out for Keith.
See, another theme song, completely irrelevant to anything we're going to talk about, and Patrick's happy about it. That, of course, is who?
This is the model Rick Martel, baby.
Rick the model Martel. So let's transition into our actual topic of the week. We sat down last week and made the pitch to Patrick and Miranda that we would watch an old show and we would go ahead and have some fun talking about it, and that's exactly what we all did. That old show being the very first ever Clash of the Champions. Clash 1, as many people would refer to it as, March 27th, 1988, so 32 years ago, Greensboro, North Carolina, the Greensboro Coliseum, and yeah, we're going to talk about it. So we'll just dive right in. Patrick, you know, they spent a lot of time during this show advertising NWA. That was also the opening to NWA main event that they used for Clash of the Champions with the belts and the lightning bolts and all of that.
I loved that intro, though. Like, for its time, like, I loved that little, like, the whole screen and all that.
And it was
that.
Different. Like, so, like, you knew something was going to be cool and happen. And
right. It felt like a big deal.
Here's the crazy thing. That crowd was on fire. Like,
yes.
Right.
There were zero
hot fucking crowd in the upper left-hand corner.
The reported number was 6,000 and the building holds 22,000. So I don't, we'll talk about that number later. But this crowd, I can tell you 6,000 wrestling fans, precisely zero jaded assholes in this crowd, and that's what made it so much fun to listen to the crowd literally
such a different time
respond to everything.
Back in a simpler time when, you know, people cared about wrestling.
Right, instead of getting themselves over or tweeting or I don't even know what.
Right.
You know, if it was now, someone in that 6,000 would just take shots of the empty seats in that arena and be like, look at
or the curtained off, curtained off or something.
Yeah. Here's what I need to know, Miranda. Are they taking shots of the empty seats before or after chanting for CM Punk? Like, what's the order of operations?
It'd have to be before. Yeah. Usually you have to get in a groove to start your CM Punk chant because you're already agitated that they didn't have your t-shirt. Or you pay $32 for a t-shirt.
And on Twitter during the main event, they would have been talking about how Sting was rammed down our throats. Like, you can't do that.
Don't go to Sting. We're not
no,
there.
No, we're going through the whole thing. You're talking about all the bitchiness.
We're not there now, though. We're not there. Save it.
They would have been bitching at it. They would have been bitching at it before the show. You know they would have.
They would have been. They would have been. Save it for the podcast. Oh wait.
Go fucking watch Sting again.
Now I do have to tell you, and I had to rewind this three different times to confirm. If you listen really, really closely to the opening of the show, when you know Bob Caudle and Tony Schiavone are talking. If you listen really closely, and I caught a little sound of it, here's what I heard. Now I went ahead and I increased the sound so that you could hear exactly what it was. But if you listen really, really close, you would catch an earful of... Oh, wait, that's what they played after. You heard the crowd, all 6,000 of them, in unison, do this. His two-year-old Adam Cole came out and put his fingers in the air, and that's how that's how that happened.
Yeah, and that's where it began.
So your opening contest was for the NWA World Television Championship, which, by the way, I didn't see Mike Rotunda wearing to the ring, which I thought was a little interesting. But it was Jimmy Garvin versus Mike Rotunda. Well, it was Rotunda, according to the ring announcer. Rotundo, according to the graphics.
Rotundo.
But that's been his life.
Rotundo.
His absolute life. The ring announcer said Rotundo. The graphic said Rotunda. But what was really important was that Teddy Long himself, the OG playa, was the referee.
Love it.
Which made me very... Right. So the rules of this, very important, was there were 3 5-minute rounds and a one count needed to win the match. However, that was never explained to the
amateur pinfalls.
Yes, amateur pinfalls. Now, as the match began,
was it amateur wrestling though?
It was a full amateur wrestling match because it was a full amateur wrestling match. Jimmy Garvin wouldn't get to haul off and punch somebody in the match. So it's a hybrid.
It's a hybrid. Yes,
by the way,
it's a combo.
Before we get too far into this, always loved the green and blue ring apron.
Yes.
Was always
we're going to talk about the ring here in a second. I got some notes about the ring. But I am immediately questioning the 6,000 reported attendance number. It does seem like way more to me, based on some of the crowd shots and the noise. Now, the building had a different ceiling at the time. It was like literally your old school tile ceiling and just very, very different, but very enjoyable to hear that crowd literally go nuts for every little thing. But I did have some notes about the ring, and you know, Miranda's a little more color coordinated. She can talk about this. This ring needs to decide what color it wants to be. Like, in looking at this ring, so you've got red, white, and blue ropes. You've got red, white, and blue corners. You got a green and blue ring apron. The blue in the turnbuckles does not match the blue in the rope. So that's a problem.
Yeah, that's hard to... And, I would imagine that was probably hard to do at that time. In 88, I mean, they probably just didn't have the resources to find the exact color.
Bill Watts just opened up his garage and was like,
Bill Watts wasn't anywhere to be found during this. So
he's talking about...
Well, they had purchased UWF already, but Watts wasn't booking, wasn't in charge, wasn't anything at this point. So
No.
Watts was there. But I watch shows like this and I realize why they went to just the single color ropes, because
Save big money on your outdoor project now at Menards. We have everything you need to keep your outdoor power equipment running smooth, so you can keep that lawn in tip-top shape or enjoy some time on your boat. Right now, all FVP, lawn and garden, and marine batteries are on sale through May 5th. Check out our entire selection of FVP batteries today and view our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals.
Save big money at Menards.
Way better. Another observation I had to me, so this match has rounds, and we know things like boxing have rounds, we know things like UFC has rounds, a lot of different sports have rounds. It's odd to me that the match that has rounds doesn't have judges, and the match that doesn't need judges has judges. Like, I just don't understand where they misplaced the judges.
Well, that's what I was saying. I thought in amateur wrestling you get points.
You do. Like you get points in amateur wrestling. You get points for takedown. But again, as Patrick said, it's a hybrid. It's a little. It's
amateur
inspired.
You gotta let that go. Suspend the disbelief.
Here's where I can't suspend disbelief. As someone who wrestled in high school, didn't wrestle in college.
He's about to tell us this story again.
Yeah, it's not again. It's not. Did I tell a story before? You don't even know what story I'm going to tell. It's actually applicable to the match. But I'm not going to talk about how I got recruited by one college and only one college to wrestle. But. And I didn't go there because they were Division III and they didn't have scholarships and I wasn't going to pay to go there. But the pinfall in this match was so stupid. Like, if you're going to have amateur pinfalls, like if you ever watch an amateur wrestling match, that ref is studying the shoulders. Like, he is there. Right. I think sometimes he pulls out a business card to see if he can slide it between the shoulder and the mat and make sure. And you get back points if their shoulders are close. Like, that's a real thing. But no, roll up, one, ring the bell.
Teddy Long is not an amateur wrestling, you know, referee. He's a pro wrestling referee. Like, come on, playa.
Rotundo was so good with that roll up, you know, a guy to take care of that it was just Teddy saw that the shoulders were down and that was that.
Now, Rick Steiner coming in afterwards, I wrote this note and I should have written a better note. I said, Rick Steiner is stealing someone's gimmick. Oh, I know whose gimmick he was stealing. I know exactly whose gimmick he was stealing. I didn't even do this on purpose. He had a 2x4. I literally didn't even do that on purpose.
He did have a 2x4.
Yes.
More like an amateur wrestler than the wrestler who was amateur wrestler.
Right, he did.
The jacket was it. And I was like, are you going to wrestle in that jacket? Like, not
the varsity club.
Hey, don't knock the varsity club.
I love the varsity club. I'm just saying that was
thing. Whoa, why are you getting so mad?
Because I love the varsity club. You jumped at me because you thought you knew.
I did know. You were all ripping on his just having the jacket. He was wearing the orange and blue of Syracuse.
He was. Rotundo. Kevin Sullivan, however, wasn't wearing his Central Florida or whatever he normally wore.
I wrote that down. It's like Kevin Sullivan in that stupid fucking purple black robe that looks it belongs to the varsity club.
With Precious. It was. And that's what I want to talk about. So Precious, the babyface, is choking Kevin Sullivan, the heel.
Precious choking a bitch with a coat hanger.
With a coat hanger.
Yes.
In 1988.
That's such the loudest pop. I loved it.
Here's Here's the message in all this for me. Twitter users, whatever social media user, whatever, don't ever complain to me about the face heel dynamic in 2020 again, because Precious, the baby face, was choking somebody with a coat hanger. And
it was self-defense. I saw it.
Right. Well, can we also just talk about how weird it is that Jimmy Garvin was a face? Like, face Jimmy Garvin was never good. Jimmy, and
but
face
in 2020,
Precious was never good. Precious
in 2020, what? Jimmy Garvin would absolutely be a face in 2020.
If people liked him,
yes, yeah, and they would.
I think, yeah. I mean, I'd see him more naturally as a cocky heel, and
but that's what gets over nowadays.
That, I mean, yeah. As far as like that was a weird perception when this dynamic first was in the ring, I was a little confused, because to me though too, like, I only knew the Varsity Club as more of a face stable. And I guess at the time they
may have never been heels.
Maybe the way that I perceived them. Maybe a lot later on. I don't know.
They were never heels. I mean, they were never faces.
I was like,
they were never faces.
I had that backwards. Reverse that. They were never baby faces.
But I don't know. It was just weird to me when I first saw people cheering for Jimmy Garvin.
I remember Jimmy from World, like watching Jimmy from World Class, where he was a dick. And then later he does turn heel because he's the part of the shitty Freebirds, the shitty version of the Freebirds.
But they were faces for a while too. Like, Jimmy bounced back and forth a lot.
That's true.
Like,
I just, not to I big never show liked levels, him as a face, but... I guess. It never felt right. How's that? Never felt right to me, Jimmy Garvin as a face.
Nah, it makes
felt,
sense.
Felt uncomfortable.
Sense. Any other notes about this match before we move on?
No.
Same no. None.
So then we got a Dr. Death Steve Williams promo, which I fast-forwarded.
I forgot that he wasn't in the Varsity Club yet, because eventually he's in the Varsity
eventually
Club
he would be.
Too.
After feuding,
like, where's
with
your
them?
Oklahoma jacket?
After feuding with them, he would then join them. And then we have the greatest tag team in wrestling history.
Yeah, the Fantastic.
Beautiful Bobby. No. Beautiful Bobby and Sweet Stan. The Midnight Express. We are in for a real treat. The greatest tag team in wrestling history is here. Here's the funny thing. History always tells us that the Fantastics didn't work out as a replacement for the Rock and Roll Express. Judging the crowd reaction of the 6,000 or so people,
they were
in Greensboro, North Carolina,
over.
They
so
were
over.
Way over. The crowd was insane for this match. Absolutely insane. Notes that I have at this point, the United States Tag Team Championships were basically the Intercontinental Championship of Tag Team Wrestling. Like, that's what they were. I love this. This match had everything. It had in-ring action, brawling, chairs, tables, you name it. This match had it in 1988. In fact, I went so far as to write in my notes, this match would stand up in 2020. Like, you do this match today.
Yeah, it's a classic tag team match. Like, this, and I think we're going to talk about this with both. Like, I think both the tag matches that, like, traditional tag matches are good in their own way.
They really are.
I think this one's better. I mean, like, if you're looking for just overall work rate, like, this is, it's going to take you to school. Like, these guys were terrific. Bobby Eaton and Stan Lane. You know, I don't know about you, Greg. I don't know if you prefer the Condry version or not, or...
Yeah, no,
yeah,
absolutely.
It's Sweet Stan and Beautiful Bobby.
Yeah, they're better. No offense to Loverboy Dennis. We love Loverboy Dennis, but sorry, bro.
Right. But it had every sort of the classic tag team stuff that I grew to like love. Like, everything from the face and peril stuff. And the other thing that I think is just kind of overriding throughout this whole show, the way the heels sell. Like, the first thing I wrote down was just Beautiful Bobby and Sweet Stan. Damn, they could sell. They made the Fantastics at the opening of that match, at that hot start, they made them look like a fucking $1 million.
They did.
Because they bumped all over the arena for them
before
the match got kicked off and got into the ring.
Literally. Like,
bumped
all over the
arena. Made them look so good.
So, a couple of notes that I have. Jim Cornette holding the table outside the ring, high enough for a Sweet Stan to throw Tommy Rogers into it from inside the ring, might still be the most creative use of a table in wrestling. And this match is 32 years old. Like, that's just amazing.
The fact that it worked, I think that was the crazy thing. Like, I think now people, you know, you're just trying to figure out the mechanics, or you wouldn't, like, I think there was just a lot of luck that got rubbed into it, and it just worked.
It did. Perfectly. Quick tags for the Midnight Express is what tag team wrestling is all about. They are the blueprint, and of course today nobody does that better than the Revival. I can't wait till we see them again. What I really loved, so when the referee was busy with Bobby Eaton and Bobby Fulton, while Tommy Rogers was still the face in peril, Sweet Stan went to all the trouble to climb through the ropes, run to the middle of the ring, just to stomp on Tommy Rogers one more time, and then ran back out of the ring. Like, all that effort, probably more damage done to himself just getting into the ring to stomp on the guy. But it's just so brilliant and so beautiful. One thing I picked up on was Jim Cornette on the outside of the ring, because we're in an era here before we had earpieces for communication, and having an active manager in Jim Cornette is so useful. You could see him blatantly giving directions to Bobby Eaton on the outside while Stanley was in the ring, and no one's the wiser because he's just managing him. But you could literally tell he's telling him what's coming up next, and it was just such a thing of beauty, and I loved every bit of it. I was impressed to hear the focus on the rules of tag team wrestling, not just in the ring, but outside the ring. Like saying that the referee wouldn't allow Bobby Fulton to help Tommy Rogers on the outside because he's too far away from their side of the ring. Like, that was, like, your domain is even the outside. You only get half the ring on the outside, too. So, was really, really, really enjoyed seeing that. Of course, we had the classic tag team wrestling spot. The referee didn't see the tag! And whenever the referee,
yeah, the phantom tag. Yeah. Phantom tag. Wrote that down.
And of course, we had the dusty finish, because we got to have the dusty finish.
Written goddamn dusty finish. Goddamn dusty finish.
After the crowd goes nuts, you have the dusty finish.
That really showed too how over the Fantastics were, because when they, you know, won, I mean, the fans just erupted. So I think I wasn't there. What was I, you know, just a babe when this whole thing happened. So not really sure as far as the context of all of this, but, you know, it really did help set them up as continuously as baby faces.
Because they just never really pushed them. They never really pushed them. And it's when you listen to Jim Ross, he's like, yeah, they just didn't have it. You hear people. And I feel like they all missed the boat because those guys were so insanely over.
I was going to save this question for the end, but we've talked about it. Was the Greensboro crowd really representative of the entire territory, or was it just that it's Greensboro and it's like that ROH home base crowd that was just going to cheer
for
ROH no matter what?
It's pretty representative of the territory, because the Rock and Roll Express was just as over in Greensboro as they were anywhere. So to me, that crowd is pretty representative of the territory. It was one of their main cities, but a good
cuz and that's the and that's the thing is I would love to go back, and actually I may eventually check some of the, like, the WCW studio shows and shit that's, you know, surrounding that time where the Fantastics were booked and part of it, and just see, you know, is there something we're missing out of seeing this Greensboro crowd and that's special about the Greensboro crowd versus, cuz I see it the same way with, like, everyone, like the heels and the faces, like, that dynamic is split right down the middle. The crowd totally buys it, eats it up, loves every second of it, is hot throughout the whole show, like you said, Greg.
Oh, yeah.
And just, like, at one point I was like, is this an AEW crowd? Or we just going to love it?
Just love everything.
Geez, or an ROH crowd?
I thought it was more of an NXT crowd, to be honest with you. It was more of an NXT crowd.
I think some of it too is timing. Like, that was 1988, and now we've gone through 32 years of wrestling, and I think the more we go through it, the more jaded we become as fans, the more it's kind of, oh, we've seen that before, the more that we want more, whatever it is, whether it's more high flying, more wrestling, more this, more that. I mean, I kind of said it jokingly, but it was a simpler time. And I think that the crowd was just in some ways happy to be there and seemingly popped for things that, like, really, you know, either took them by surprise.
I also think it's really important to note why this show was happening and what it was running for free up against at the time.
Yes.
And I think that's another thing, is that this was an opportunity, and I think a very wise decision. Like, and I you know, kudos to the people at WCW are for making the decision to be like, yo, we're gonna go up against WrestleMania and we're gonna put a show on for free, because Vince had been screwing them pretty hard over the last 6 to 8 months running free shows against their pay-per-views and kind of freezing them out. So that crowd, I could see being just as much of this as our stuff too, and we're going to put it over as hard as we can. Because
it did run against WrestleMania 4, and
right,
and of course, which is where Macho Man Randy Savage won the WWF Championship. If I don't say this, Patrick, I'm going to get a million messages about it. This was not WCW. This was the NWA.
Oh, sorry,
didn't exist yet.
The NWA.
People yell.
Same shit. Turner really. Owned it. Not yet.
No, Turner didn't own it at all. He didn't own it.
I know.
Not one bit. What's interesting, though, we talk about times, 32 years, whatever. 13 years later, what this would become ceased to exist. And that again, WWE, you know, they're still going strong and still having to do this week in and week out without ever stopping until the coronavirus hits. So it's definitely a challenge for that. I did like we ended the match, of course, by whipping people because that's what we do. Any other last-minute thoughts before we jump ahead?
Nah, okay. It's cool.
Then we had Al Perez in the top 10 seeds of the Crockett Cup, so we're going to skip that. Don't care. Then we had, so again, the confusion that this show likes to give us. We had a Chicago. Go ahead.
I don't know what this match was. No, I think I know where you're going, but this match was essentially two titled matches.
It was.
The announcers kept calling it, was it Texas Barbed Wire?
It was a, on according to the graphic, it was a Chicago street fight, and then in parentheses.
Yeah, Chicago street fight on the graphic, but then the announcers kept calling it.
But the graphic, but right Texas below Chicago Fire. Street fight, right below it said 6-man Texas Barbed Wire. So we've got Chicago, we got Texas. I mean, we had Dusty Rhodes and the Road Warriors teaming up, and that's your Chicago and your Texas right there.
Was it a Chicago street fight match within a Texas Barbed Wire match?
It was a question wrapped in an enigma. I don't know. All I know is that it was really confusing to the point where I put the winners of the match were Dusty Rhodes and the World Warriors, and that didn't matter one bit. Like it had no,
right.
No bearing.
Oh gosh, and I feel terrible because I would sound like angry old man Jim Ross. As a kid, I wrote this. This was my note. As a kid, I loved the Road Warriors. Totally get why, because they were badass. They beat everybody up. As an adult, I hate them as a tag team.
Because
it goes back to what we just talked about was so great about the Midnights and the Fantastics. The selling. They didn't sell shit in that match for the Warlord and the Barbarian or Dusty. And Dusty was right there with them too.
No, they didn't.
And that, like, it was just like, man, that was a whole bag of nothing. And then they tried to quote unquote get their heat back after the match was over.
They did.
The other note I had was that I felt like Animal should have kept the hockey mask forever. That kind of looked dope. I loved it. Him wrestling with the hockey mask. And because of the eye
injury.
The mask
was cool. Yeah. The mask was cool.
But, you know, he never would have kept it. Well, he would sell the face paint.
I don't know if you could tell, though, too, like, as the Barbarian was trying to, like, kick it off, he had to, like, you could tell his hands.
Off.
Like, he threw it off.
He
was on there too good.
He had him, you know, tip it off a little bit.
And that's what this whole match this whole match was about, the post-match attack on Animal. That's really what it was. The finish was anticlimactic. This really came off, maybe Chicago street fight means Battle Royal, because that's what this felt like to me the whole time. But, I, you know, we talk about selling, and we need to talk about the Warlord for a second here. Because if you love selling, you got to love the Warlord. Selling the barbed wire like it was killing him one moment, then blatantly grabbing it on the rope and not even feeling any effects less than a minute later. Like,
I feel like this is why the 80s get a bad rap. There's so much inconsistency
because
in this match.
The 80s get a bad rap
just
because
the match before.
The 80s get a bad rap because in 2020, we know the barbed wire is fake and we don't care. Whereas in 1988, we wanted it to be real and cared when we found that it wasn't. So, this match, though, is really what everything has been about for the first three matches. The aftermath match was more important than the match itself. And it's really funny, too, because people look at an era like this as more of what they want. But if a company today spends too much focus on post-match shenanigans, we get complaints about how they made the match seem unimportant. And all three of these matches, they made the match seem unimportant with the post-match shenanigans. No matter how much I love the Midnight Express and Fantastics match, they still demeaned it with what they did. So this was the throwaway. This was the intermission of the show. Was this match?
Yeah, it really was.
and it took him forever to set everything up. Then they had this Nikita Koloff interview, and at this point, as I'm hating every interview they do, I thought, you know, I honestly do think these interviews were effective, but 32 years later, I just simply don't care about these interviews whatsoever. Because right. Everyone who they interviewed is like someone they wanted to be a big deal, but never became a very big deal. Like Nikita was the biggest out of these people, but even Nikita didn't quite get to, you know, they wanted him to be a world. They wanted him to be like the replacement for Magnum TA. That did not happen.
Right.
Yes. I did write Nikita Koloff looking like a snack in white. Cause he looked sharp in that suit. But I have no idea what that promo was supposed to be.
It was just words put together.
And I'm just like, just shut
go
it,
back
just
and watch it. All the old World Championship Wrestling episodes on the network. Every Nikita Koloff promo is terrible. Like, he was a bad promo. Like, he was just a bad. Yes. He needed a Paul Heyman. Like, that's what he needed. Like.
Well, he had an really Ivan Koloff, and then they got rid of him.
Well, Ivan Koloff was Walking Death in 1988. So,
I understand.
I mean, what he was saying, from what I understood, was somewhat relevant now, talking about your health and taking care of yourself. I mean, it's like he predicted the future, that he knew three would be watching this during a quarantine.
Right. He was the Russian say your prayers and eat your vitamins.
He was,
guy.
Even though he was from St. Louis.
He was. It's a joke, but it's true. Like,
he never should have turned
to position him.
He never should have turned. He never should have turned, and never should have grew hair. Like those two things. Never
right? No, he never should have. He should have stayed.
Stayed a baby face and should have had this guy.
Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Paul Heyman, and I serve as the advocate for the reigning, defending, undisputed Universal Champion, Brock Lesnar!
Let's talk about the NWA World Tag Team Championship. Barry Windham and Lex Luger. Lex Luger wasn't ousted from the Four Horsemen that long before this. Challenged the champions, Arn Anderson and Tully Blanchard. Really liked the hot open to this match. Through that first torture rack, like, they had the fans eating from the palms of their hands. The fans literally thought the match was going to be over in mere minutes. It wasn't even that long of a match. Felt a lot longer than it was, and that's not a bad thing. Dude, Barry Windham, like, that guy was over. Like, O-V-E-R, over. I mean,
he put a sleeper hold over like that. Like, the fans just popped when he put that sleeper
hold. Here's the problem
with
that sleeper hold, though. Because there was a problem I had with the sleeper hold. And I don't know if Barry just did the move on instinct and didn't mean to. Barry buried his own finisher. Like, Barry hits a lariat, then goes for, like, a backdrop and a sleeper hold, and until he has no problem kicking out. Like, I don't – like, why would Barry hit the lariat and bury his own finisher? I don't think he did it on purpose. Interesting fact, so the announcers continued to promote the Crockett Cup several times during this match and promoting that this could be the final match. So I went back and looked at the 1988 Crockett Cup, which takes place less than a month later in the same building. So Barry Windham would turn on Lex Luger less than a month after this match and join the Four Horsemen. However, they were close because Lex Luger and Sting would beat Arn Anderson and Tully Blanchard in the finals of the 1988 Crockett Cup. So that was a little foreshadowing that was probably a little too true for what ended up happening. Doug the finish, Doug J.J. Dillon introducing the chair in the match, and Lex Luger actually doing something smart for once and throwing Arn Anderson in it. I feared, you know, not remembering the results of these matches, I feared a second dusty finish on the same show, even though we just had one, you know, two matches ago. However, in hindsight, Luger Windham had to win this match. Like, given what was about to happen on this show and what had already happened on this show, these two guys had to win. Like, the fans needed that moment. Side note, they would hold the belts for 24 days when Barry would turn on Lex Luger and join the Four Horsemen. And then
give the belts right back to Arn and Tully, right?
That the match where he turns is the match where they lose.
Right. Yeah, that's how he gets. That's how they win.
Who would hold them for 149 days, by the way, before losing them to the Midnight Express, and then going to WWF, ending the Four Horsemen. So that was.
Yep.
That was sad.
Fucking Tully.
But new champions, Lex Luger and Barry Windham. Any other thoughts about this? A great tag team.
I wrote this note. I say this all the time. I think I'm still the only guy who thinks Lex Luger could work.
Damn sure could work the crowd.
What?
he could work the crowd, that's for sure. His clotheslines were bad, but I'm going to be honest with you, so were Sting's. I know we're not at that match yet.
Right.
But equally bad clotheslines.
Right. And then just, you talked about the finish. The heels losing in a way where, like, they didn't lose their heat and their, like, they didn't lose anything in losing. And I think that's one of the things that so many people gripe and moan about. And I know that you're not big on him and you stopped listening to his podcast because he complains too much. But this is one of the few things that JR has said more than once that I do agree with, is that there are ways to lose. And if you've built your character and done it well, you can lose and it doesn't hurt a damn thing. And I think that is very much proven true out of this match. Like, Arn and Tully should have never left. Like, I get why they left, but like, they weren't going anywhere for a long time as a tag team if they had stayed together and not jumped ship.
Yeah, they had years left in them, and that was lost because of issues over money. But that happens.
Right. That happens.
Miranda, any other thoughts on this 9 minute?
I like this match. I mean, it was very different than the other tag matches to me, as far as, you know, just more in ring. But I agree. I liked that finish with the chair arm going through it. And it was entertaining. Yeah, it didn't feel like it went on very long.
No,
and
the match was only 9 minutes long. I was really surprised.
Yeah, it just like it was long enough where it was engaging, and of course not too long. But I liked it. I thoroughly enjoyed pretty much all of this. This was definitely like, oh God, it sounds so old, but like a history lesson for me, just because I'm still, I know that I made that sound like so bad, but
you
know, no, it's a history lesson for anybody. I mean,
there's a lot of people who haven't watched shows like this, like from this generation of fans. There's a lot of people who talk like they've watched these shows that haven't watched these shows.
When there were things that I'd forgotten about, like this show.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I've watched it. I haven't watched it as many times as Patrick has, but I've watched this show before and watched it live, and then I've watched it since then, thanks to the network. But there's a lot of things. Like I didn't know who won the tag team title match that we just talked about. Like, I didn't know who was going to win that match.
Really?
Watching, I don't remember.
That's well, I've seen that clip of Lex jumping up and down.
Right.
In other vignettes.
Although that's just Lex's move just when Lex he wins a general match. Like, you could have seen that
Well,
on
no,
any...
but I, that's true. But I want to say I distinctly remember this one. Because I, but, you know.
No, I'm being silly. 8 years later, he would do the same thing when he beat Hogan. Was it 96 or 97 when he
did
it?
I think it was
96. I was going to say, not when
96, actually. Yeah, fall 96.
Did he do that when he beat Yokozuna? No, he got carried up on
he slammed Yokozuna and then got the hero's carry. But he does, he also does the, like, the flex arm thing. He, like, claps his hands and then flexes, like, off to the side like that all the time. That's one of his big, like, celebration moves, too. Before Lex got hurt, I'm going to say this one more time. Before Lex got hurt, he was not that bad of a worker. And
no, I don't think
No, I'm not saying you are. He gets a reputation of being like this trash of a worker. And he really wasn't that bad.
Buzzer, because I've been hearing this argument for 9 years. But it's true. That's the thing. It is true. Like Lex gets a bad rap, and I don't know why. And we've been talking about that for years. But, like, you're right. It is the absolute truth. So let's talk about the main event, the NWA World's Heavyweight Championship, Sting challenging Ric Flair. Of course, the match ends in a 45-minute time limit draw. So here, okay, the problems, and I love this match, but the problems start at the beginning. As four judges were announced, you had Gary Juster from the NWA Board of Directors, Sandy Scott, introduces a former wrestler, he was also a local promoter, Patty Mullen, who was a Penthouse Pet of the Year, but they wouldn't say Penthouse, they just said Pen of the Year, Ken Osman, star of Leave It to Beaver, who was there, who was announced as a judge, and Jason Hervey of the Wonder Years was announced, but wasn't announced as a judge, he was just sitting with them. Later they showed the judges, all with notepads, and neither Jason Hervey nor Ken Osman had notepads, but the other three did, and they were sitting in between each judge. And that, I think, is the commentary. There were only three judges, but they made us think there were four. And as a viewer, they probably made you think there were five, but really there were only three.
Yeah.
And
you're like, why is he sitting with them?
Because it's stupid. I don't know. Jason Hervey.
Let's real quick, as bad as Jason Hervey was a big enough deal. The Wonder Years in 88 was a huge show.
Yeah.
So of course, like, But it would have made more sense, I honestly, if you're going to do that, do the WrestleMania treatment with your guest timekeeper sort of thing. Like, maybe Jason Hervey rings the bell.
Guest standing around. Pin up.
Well, and even the way that they were all standing, like when he was introducing them, Jason was still kind of in the middle instead of the end. So even if they had just told him stand on the other side of this other guy.
It was clear they really didn't know what to do with him.
Yeah,
you know Jason. I mean? They're like, oh, just
Jason just looked happy to be here. Like he was happy to be standing around wrestlers. It was basically
he's a big fan. Yeah.
Was like in 2020, Jason will be putting on a promotion called Cactus League Wrestling. Anyway, so J.J. Dillon was suspended in a cage above the ring because we needed that. That was something that was done. Interesting of note, the announcer didn't say there was a 45-minute time limit during the introductions. He did when he mentioned the 5-minute had elapsed, but didn't. Again, it's like they were purposely keeping things from the fans during this match.
Well, now, Shivani and Ross, are you talking about the crowd?
The crowd.
Ring announcer
talked about the 45 minutes.
Ring announcer didn't mention it. They showed the judges and again neither Jason Hervey nor Ken Osmond had pen and paper. They were seen between everyone else. Dude, Sting's rat tail, like really?
Sting's
rat tail.
You can judge it now, and 1,000% you should. But that was a thing.
That was I agree. I hate rat tails, but man, did he make it! It just pulled the look together.
Nah, you just rest those things.
He'd have been okay without the rat tail. Like, let's be honest, he'd have been just fine without the rat tail. The look would have been okay. Right. Everything would have been fine.
And believe me, based on his life before he found Jesus, he definitely had no problems there.
No, he had no problems. The rat tail didn't slow him down. But no, yeah, complaining about the rat tail in 2020 when it was over in 1988 is like complaining about things being open during the coronavirus before everything shut down, which people are doing today and yesterday and tomorrow, so it doesn't matter. The hardest thing about watching a 45-minute time limit draw is knowing it's going to be a 45-minute time limit draw.
Yeah.
Like, that's why I'm one of the two people on planet Earth who don't like Bret Hart versus Shawn Michaels from WrestleMania. Like, it's 60 minutes. We knew it was going to be 60 minutes going in, and there were zero falls during the hour. Like, to me, knowing this was going to be a draw was that interesting. So before the 5-minute warning, they had shown the judges four different times, which to me was a dead giveaway. Like, something's going to happen involving these judges.
Well, that's logical TV, though.
Right. Yeah, but
like, you do that. You set up your TV audience.
A little too obvious on that one for me. For a 45-minute match, I thought they did a great job stretching things out in a way that didn't feel long. Announcing the time that had elapsed was interesting, as I don't remember them doing that previously. I think they might have done it during the first round of the opening match. But then only the Midnight Express and Fantastics even went over 10 minutes besides this match, so who knows. Really, really weird watching wrestling, seeing Ric Flair chop somebody, and not hearing the crowd woo. Like, that is surreal.
That wasn't a thing yet, yep.
That was not a thing at all. Crazy as it sounds, even in 1988, I think Sting was in the wrong company at the wrong time.
Why?
Had he been in WWE, then WWF at the time, I think he would have gone on to be the replacement for Hulk Hogan, they hoped, Ultimate Warrior.
Yeah, he would have been the Ultimate Warrior that wouldn't have failed.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because he was a company guy, he kept his shit together at least enough to not put himself in trouble.
Yeah.
And the thing that and I think that you want to talk about just kind of classic booking and a frustrating thing is this went to a time limit draw. Sting doesn't really. When does he get his actual big win?
1990.
Because he gets hurt. Well, 90.
I have it in my notes. Yeah. July of 1990.
So two years. So he's then like in this, and people argue that this match is like the match. This match.
Well, we'll get there. Let's finish the match first.
Okay.
For 35 minutes in, and I finally saw something that was not good, and that was Sting trying to get into the abdominal stretch. Like, it was so bad. Flair helping him get into it, whatever. But that's the only thing 35 minutes in that wasn't nearly perfect. So I gotta.
When did he miss the head scissors? There was that was early. You tried to do
that. That was early.
That was like it, that I was like, oh,
that was so out of place. I'm like, well, what year is it? Like he's trying to do this head scissors. it's like he watched a tape of Mexico right before he went out or something, and he and Flair thought to try it. Despite all the nods towards this being a time limit draw, we had 10 minutes left, and it still felt like we could have a winner in the next 10 minutes. And to me, that's an often overlooked thing about this match. Despite going 45 minutes and knowing it's going to go 45 minutes, it still always felt like it could end at any moment. And that's a really a credit, probably to Flair more than anybody, but to these guys. I absolutely loved, love how Ric Flair was selling the figure four leg lock during this match. One thing I never understood was how someone would undersell or no sell when someone hits their own finisher on them. And you see that sometimes now. Like, you're literally undercutting your own finisher. But Flair sold the figure four like his leg was broken. Like, literally sold it. They kept talking about Young Star. Yeah. Go ahead.
He was always good about that in general. And just to see how he did that with Sting and even just that crowd pumping Sting up for the reversal. It was just something that I just was – my eyes were glued to that. And now thinking of things backwards, seeing, you know, what I know now and seeing something from 88, it just, to me, it started to make a lot more sense as far as just Ric Flair, the wrestler, and his style and really the power of the figure four. I mean, I think his selling at times has been crazy, but that's just Ric Flair as well. But it really does help tell the story. And I'd rather someone kind of oversell and be a little dramatic than not at all.
See, and this time especially, and I wrote this, you know, you talked about the figure four, Greg, but much like a lot of these other heels that we followed, whether it's the Midnights, whether it's Arn and Tully, these guys that are at the top that are heels, their ability to sell and make the face look like $1 million is really what makes this a big deal. And it doesn't, you know, it's not just the figure four. Like, there's a test of strength very early in there when Sting does a twist, and Flair's famous for yelling, "Oh God," when he gets put in, and he does that more than once. He gets that thing, he's like, "Oh God," and you're like, "Oh man," he's really putting that over. And the whole sense of desperation that Flair sells throughout that match, of just trying to survive Sting, is my favorite kind of Flair. Like, it's the same thing when he would work with Steamboat and it was desperately trying to hold on, even though that sort of, you know, kind of shifts to more of a peer-to-peer thing as they go over that series. But him just being scared to death and fighting for his life and getting out of the way just in time, or falling out of the turnbuckle while Sting's going for a stinger splash. He doesn't actually dodge the stinger splash. Nope. He falls down because he's so beat up, and that causes Sting to miss. That's poetic.
Oh yeah, this is,
and this it is made me think of one of your friends, Greg, because it made me think of your buddy Dom Vitale and the way that he talks about building a good match what he thinks is important. Dom Vitale loves this match. I don't even have to ask him to know that he would love this match.
No, he does. He does. A couple reference points. Flair was 39 when this match happened, and Sting was 29.
Oh, he's so old.
Yeah, I know.
So old.
Sting would actually win the title. And what's funny is that Flair was 39, and this is only his fifth title reign. And he would go on to have, you know, according to the usual history, 16 of them. He says 19. History says 22. But it's, you know, Sting would not win until July of 1990, as we talked about. The final 5 minutes of this match were fantastic. Like, Sting, no selling, heading into the last minute, like, that let the fans believe that he was going to pull this thing off. Then 30 seconds later, he goes for a submission move with 30 seconds left, which I didn't understand whatsoever.
That's his move, though.
Yeah, but there's 30 seconds left.
Yeah, because there was only 30 seconds left, Greg.
I know. So we had judges. Of course, Patty Mullen picked Ric Flair, Gary Juster picked Sting, and Sandy Scott, as a judge who's supposed to help pick the winner, rolls the match a draw. So we announced four judges, had five sitting at ringside, and only used three. And then the graphic they put up showed Ric Flair as the winner. So that was a little bit of a miss. But seriously,
as much as a Chicago street fight, yeah, Texas inside a Texas,
you know, they really should have just left it up to Tommy Young, who is just the greatest referee in the world. Let him just pick a winner.
If you go back and watch old World Class, when a match would go to the time limit draw, the referee would actually pick a winner, and I just found that really interesting. But seriously, why have judges? Like, why do that? Like, just let it be a draw. like it was a time limit draw. Let it be a time limit draw. But you were alluding to this earlier, and I want to talk about it. Did this match truly make Sting? And we're all going to answer this question. So, Patrick, you go first.
I don't think it did as much as people like to believe it did at the time.
Miranda?
I mean, in my limited historical context, I would say, yeah. I mean, I think there's a reason why people think it did. I mean, that was a 45-minute match with Ric Flair, and even though he didn't win the title, I mean, he performed really fairly well in that match. I mean, he was super over with that crowd, so I think all those elements helped build to this match being, you know, one of the ones that helped make him a star.
I agree. I actually do believe this match made Sting, despite the fact he didn't win. Despite he didn't win the belt for almost 2.5 years later, he was a huge draw from them moving forward from this point, and I do think this match made Sting. Different question, though, but to me similar. Did this match make Ric Flair, Patrick?
What do you mean?
Okay. I think this match made Ric Flair. It made Ric Flair the Ric Flair we think of today. Like, he made Sting.
You're arguing like the nationwide, like, sort
nationwide audience. I think more people.
I can buy that
this match
because for his audience, I mean, you all got to recall. Like, I'm watching Mid-Atlantic stuff right now from '83. He's the world champion, and everybody knows it. And he's the guy. And
right.
Like, so territorially, he was always the guy. This is a big national stage that put him out there to be seen in a different way. And so I could buy that argument.
Like, I love me some Flair versus Steamboat, and always have. I think this is a better performance out of Ric Flair than any of those three matches. When Ric Flair worked with Ricky Steamboat, he had Ricky Steamboat to work with. But he made Sting. He carried Sting. He taught Sting so much in this one match. Like, to me, this might be Ric Flair's finest performance. Now, we weren't there when he goes to Puerto Rico and goes 60 minutes with Carlos Colon all around the loop, because Flair was doing these draws everywhere all the time, putting the local guy over by going 60 with him, refusing. Like, local guys would ask to go 30 because they couldn't go 60, and Flair would say no. because it's the NWA World Heavyweight Championship, you got to go 60. To me, this might be Ric Flair's best, greatest performance of all time. Like, watching this match, I'm just in awe of what he did. And what he did for Sting and just everything he put together. Bad booking of judges, whatever assigned, just let it be a time limit draw and we'd all be good. But to me, this is the Ric Flair legacy. This is how Ric Flair is the greatest player, you know, greatest wrestler of all time because of a performance like this, in my opinion. So that's where I'm going with that one. So Clash of the Champions won, the very first ever Clash of the Champions. Heck of a night. Did go head-to-head with WrestleMania 4. Did do some damage, according to people you hear on various podcasts, to the pay-per-view rating. And as a night that you know, will always be remembered. Might be the greatest Clash of Champions ever. And that's, you know, maybe New York Knockout with Flair and Funk. Who knows? Maybe Flair Steamboat, but the rest of that card was kind of weak. But Clash 1 in the books. Hope you guys enjoyed that.
All right, gentlemen, you have 3 minutes, and you better make it good.
We got 3 minutes, and we're out of here. The clock is ticking, and we're in the clear. We got 3 minutes, and we're out of here. We got 3 minutes, and we're out.
So we always love to joke that, you know, oh, no one listens to the shows, no one listens to the shows. And I always tell you, people listen to the show. So a couple weeks ago, we had some fun. And during Pod is War that I had to host, one of the 10 potential names for the show was Fuck You, Jimmy Rave. And then we sat here on this show, and I explained the origin of Fuck You, Jimmy Rave. And like I said, people listen to this show. So I got a message a few days ago from one Jimmy Rave. I'm going to read you that message. Hey, sir. I'm reading it on air. Hey, sir. Just wanted to double check and make sure you got your package. I had one get sent back to me. I haven't replied to this message yet from Jimmy Rafe.
You left him on red?
Left him on red. Yep. Left him on red. So, I mean, I promote wrestling shows. I have to leave a lot of people on red. Because there's too many to reply to. There's too many to reply to nowadays. But, so my question to you guys. Do I, of course, you know, this is going to get back to Jimmy Rave, because obviously the first conversation has got back to Jimmy Rave, because he sent me a message. Well, you know about shrimp cocktail anyway.
I would ask for some shrimp cocktail with the package.
Do I play it dumb? Am I like, oh, yeah, it didn't come. Oh, no. Do I call bullshit? What do I do?
Ask him what address. He said, yo, you know, what was the address on the package? Like, test us.
This is cool. I mean, catch him, to be honest, I don't entirely know where you live, Greg.
You've been here. Like, it's...
Yeah. I mean, I gave a different friend directions to pick you up or pick me up at your house and gave them the wrong address, so...
That's true.
Or no. Wasn't it that, like, there was like an east and a west or whatever, and I gave...
That was a different house, though. That was a different house.
Oh, that was it. Shit, it's been that long since I've been in your house. I don't know, man. Because here's the thing: is I know you're going to do what you want to do anyway. Like, because I'm the nice guy. Like, I'm the nice guy. Like, I just want the swag. Like, be like, sure, yeah, I'll let you have your feel good, make good. But that's me.
I'd say prove it. Take a picture. Prove it.
See, there you go.
Prove it.
Make sure you send that screenshot to Miranda too.
Yes.
Put it, and Miranda can put it on her Instagram account.
Yes. Prove it.
Hashtag right, Miranda
so we'll,
Show.
I'll reply to Jimmy Rave in the next 24 hours, and we'll see what happens. But I found that very interesting. Everyone loves to think that nobody listens, but lots of people do listen, and things get back to people when they're said.
Nobody listens to my show
during these shows.
Yeah, no one listens to my show. So, except one, thanks to shout out to the person who put a nice long comment on my Facebook about the comments on the hashtag Miranda Show. That was really nice.
Just because cool. They don't comment doesn't mean they don't listen. Trust me, people.
That is true. I've never commented on anyone's podcast that I ever listened to.
See, exactly. People listen to the shows. Patrick O'Dowd, tell people where they can find you and what they can listen to.
You can find me on the Twitter at Wrestling Realist. That is at WRESTLNGREALIST. I am up to 462 followers, Greg.
Got two more. That's
exciting. I know. I'm growing.
He said growing, and not anyway, growing.
You can listen to me on this show. You can also listen to me on Tuesdays right now until Greg moves me on the Bandwagon Nerds podcast. We talked about our top 10 Saturday morning cartoons that we enjoyed as children. God. I had so much fun, and the numbers are heavily favoring the Looney Tunes at this point. So jump over to the Bandwagon Nerds Twitter, make a vote. I still think G.I. Joe is better, but whatever. Yeah, that's me.
While you're here, Patrick.
Yep.
It's time for another edition of Baron Corbin Sucks.
It doesn't matter which of the two nights of WrestleMania Baron Corbin works, his segment will still suck, because he sucks.
That'll do it for this week's edition of Baron Corbin Sucks.
All right, Miranda, tell everybody where they can find you and what they, and conversely, I, can expect on this week's edition of the Hashtag Miranda Show, since I have no idea.
You can find me on social media, specifically Facebook and Instagram, at the hashtag Miranda, hashtag spelled out. I'm at 299 Instagram followers, so if you want to be lucky 300, go ahead and add me now. Start following me on Instagram. I can't guarantee you'll be number 300, but if you want to be in the running, just follow me. And as far as what we're going to be talking about on the hashtag Miranda show, we're going to be talking about WrestleMania, of course, 2 weeks away, going over the big announcements that happened last week. One regarding the host of WrestleMania, Rob Gronkowski, the fact that WrestleMania is being split into two nights, and the rumors and speculation regarding WrestleMania matches being pre-taped, including two matches that have a lot of rumors swirling regarding being filmed off-site in some special locations.
You know, I really should have written that article. I told you guys last week on both shows they were pre-taping WrestleMania matches. And Then I sent an email and confirmed it, and sure enough, now it's true, and everyone's talking about it. And I'll go so far as to tell you, not only are they going to record some WrestleMania matches, they already have, and will continue to. And you know what? That's just what it is. I won't be tweeting those things, though, but you can still follow me on social media, at ChairShotGreg. Of course, you can listen to this show and all the shows that we have to offer, including the hashtag Miranda Show, Pot is War, Badlands Wrestling Mount Rushmores. By the way, this week's edition of Badlands Wrestling Mount Rushmores features me, Greg DeMarco. I am the guest of Mags this week, which is really funny. So a couple weeks ago, the topic that the guests got to talk about was the Mount Rushmore of Royal Rumble surprise entrances. And then last week, the guests got to talk about the Mount Rushmore of Intercontinental Champions.
Jesus, I shouldn't have been on those shows.
No, you shouldn't.
What shows?
What topic does Greg get? Greg gets the Mount Rushmore of on a pole matches.
Judy Bagwell better be there.
Yes.
Hilarious.
Judy Bagwell absolutely is part of this thing. It's a really fun topic.
Can I put a request in for the Miranda show discussion? Since I don't usually hang around, can I just put in one request for the show?
Sure. What's your request?
Can you and Greg talk about the Undertaker Tiger commercial, please? Please. Have you seen the Undertaker Tiger commercial?
I've seen clips of it. I haven't seen the full thing.
Oh my God! You two have to get on YouTube and watch the Undertaker Tiger commercial.
All right, I'll work. Please, on it. I'll work on it.
Yes, because isn't the guy in the tiger now? He has his own like Netflix.
There's a whole documentary. Yes. Yeah, I don't know anything about that, but the Undertaker with Michelle McCool in a pool with a tiger.
I thought that was photoshopped at first. When I saw just the picture, I was like, "This is photoshopped, right?"
Please watch this.
Isn't today the Undertaker's birthday? Shout out to the Undertaker.
Yes, it is.
Since people listen to the show, we know the Undertaker's probably listening. So totally happy birthday, Mr. Calloway. Salute.
Oh, he uses his shoot name.
Yeah, don't do that. Don't go Calloway.
Oh, come on.
He's a locker room leader.
Not the Undertaker's birthday. The Undertaker is, you know, never dead. Think about that.
It's not like he's Phil Brooks or anything.
Why? This was a good show. Why you gotta go and ruin it? Like, seriously.
Hashtag Miranda's fault.
This was a good show.
It always is.
This was a good show, and you got to go and do all of that. It's not going to get me down, just like the coronavirus. I'm going to keep going. I'm going to keep being happy. I'm going to keep being fantastic, man.
T-Mobile 5G home internet can leave you with slower speeds during its busiest hours. Why deal with that? Switch to Cox internet with 2x faster download speeds than T-Mobile 5G home internet during peak hours. Visit cox.com/5G home to learn more.
Heart, care. We believe these two words are better together. At Biltmore Cardiology, they are inseparable. That's why our team of board-certified cardiologists is focused not only on outcomes,
but on providing compassionate cardiovascular care. Heart care is better together. Schedule an appointment today at BiltmoreCardiology.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.